You're tuned to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. It's getting increasingly stormy on the sun, and that's likely to cause problems on Earth. A center in Boulder tracks solar activity 24/7 and sounds the alarm when sun storms threaten to interfere with everything from power grids to air travel. Tom Bogdan heads the Space Weather Prediction Center and joins us from Boulder. Tom, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
When we say storms on the sun, what does that really mean?
The sun is the source of space weather, and it comes in the form of bursts of electromagnetic radiation, usually in the short wavelengths, ultraviolet and X-ray, showers of energetic particles, mostly hydrogen and helium atoms that have been stripped of their electrons. And finally, from time to time, in a very spectacular way, the sun sheds parts of its outer atmosphere and just hurls that material out into space. And we imaginatively call those things coronal mass ejections.
So when we talk about weather or storms, here on Earth, that may mean rain, that may mean hail. In the sun's case, it's far-flung gases and energy and heat coming
and
our
radiation,
way.
Yes.
And radiation. Yes. Let's not forget radiation.
Yes. And we are protected by a very thick atmosphere that absorbs all of that ultraviolet and X-ray and a magnetosphere. And both of those structures prevent most of that from getting to us here on the ground. So as humans, we've been pretty much impervious to it down here, except perhaps when the night when we looked up and saw the aurora borealis.
Which is a function of solar storms and space weather.
That's correct. The aurora is the real single manifestation that we see down here as humans of space weather ongoing.
But our connection to this weather is getting more noticeable as we deploy technologies beyond our atmosphere.
That's the key to understanding why space weather is becoming important. It's because many advanced technologies are creeping into our lives and our livelihood. Satellite-delivered telecommunication services. Some of your listeners may be getting satellite feed of this program right now.
They are.
GPS that's being used for global positioning, navigation, but also for timing activities. Timing is very important in the business world to make sure that transactions are sequential. And then finally, power. All of these activities carry certain vulnerabilities to extreme space weather in particular, and they're all very interconnected, and hence the interest in space weather increases every time more of these gadgets find their way into our lives.
We'll talk about the connection between space weather and the gadgets momentarily, but we're entering a period in which space weather's going to get rocky, dramatic.
More interesting.
More interesting.
Is how I like to think about it. The sun has an activity cycle for its weather in the same way that there's a hurricane season. We're just starting into hurricane season the beginning of June. And of course, hurricanes come and go based on the Earth's yearly cycle. The sun cycle, on the other hand, is about 11 to 12 years long. It's a curious cycle that doesn't depend much on the Earth at all. And it goes through periods of enhanced activity that we call solar maximum, and then reduced, quiet, slumbering activity, which is solar minimum. We're just coming out of solar minimum now, and activity is starting to increase as we move towards the next maximum in solar activity that we're forecasting for sometime in 2013.
And how is that likely to affect all this technology?
Depends on the severity of the storms that come out. But whether we get a severe Category 5 hurricane or an equivalent Category 5 solar storm depends on rare events, sort of things coming together that make the quote-unquote perfect storm. The largest storm that we know about from our records occurred back in 1859. And we know that if that storm were to happen today, the impacts on power grids could be extreme. Loss of satellites could take place, and we certainly would lose GPS capabilities on the sunlit side of the Earth. The 1859 storm, for instance, to give you an idea of how severe that was, The aurora borealis was seen as far south as Havana, Cuba, and the northern parts of Colombia in South America. telegraph operators, and telegraph was our way, was our kind of cheap version of the power grid at that time, discovered that they could operate their telegraph lines disconnecting the batteries because there was, if you will, celestial power powering those lines. And then they started burning down telegraph houses because there was just too much current coming in.
Well, that helps me understand a bit better what the connection is between that solar activity and the power grid. But expound on that just a little bit. It's just that there's so much energy coming from the sun that it interferes with our energy conveyance systems?
Yep, that's how it works. The grid is, in a sense, a very large antenna draped over the continents of the world. And when these parts of the sun's atmosphere, the coronal mass ejections, impinge on the magnetosphere of the Earth, they cause magnetic field fluctuations down here on the ground. And that's the impact on the grid, is there spurious currents that are created by the Earth's magnetic field that then end up in places like transformers where they are not wanted and where their energy is dissipated. And the capability of burning up or destroying transformers and destabilizing power systems in general are the concerns we have from these sort of geomagnetic storms.
Is there an equivalent then of the world plugging into a power bar, you know, something that can protect us from these kinds of surges?
We protect ourselves from these surges routinely since at least the 1980s. The smaller ones that exist that are not so large as that 1859 event. For such a large storm as the 1859 caliber storm, the feeling out there among the grid operating community is that the best course of action would be actually to disconnect the transformers from the system while that storm passes, and that might take anywhere from 2 to 8 hours, depending on the severity of that storm and how long it lasts.
In other words, that for a period of hours, the entire world is without grid power, or just certain sections of it?
Certain sections, but likely those sections would be all of North America, perhaps, Northern Europe, at least parts of Asia. The solar storms tend to have a preferred impact at higher latitudes where we see the aurora, of course, and it's there where the connectivity of the Earth to the interplanetary medium is strongest. So yes, one would envision a situation, and it would be a very rare event, of course, where the grid would be brought down on purpose for a relatively short period of time to safeguard critical infrastructure. Now, many users, and particularly hospitals, emergency managers, have backup power. There are generators out there that run on diesel. So many of the critical parts of our lives will continue to function on backup power during that period. But our homes, traffic lights, for instance, some of those would suffer a minor inconvenience during that period. But it is far better than the prospect of potentially losing large portions of the transformers in the grid.
And your job, in part, at the Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder is to tell the decision makers when these kinds of solar storms are coming and will be active.
Absolutely. We operate 24/7 around the clock. We always have forecasters monitoring the sun in our forecast products. And we are the flagship of about 13 other regional warning centers for space weather around the globe.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And we're talking with Tom Bogdan. He's director of the Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder. And we're talking about what's in store in the next few years, and that's a period of increased activity of solar storms. Do you think there would ever be a day, especially when solar weather, solar flares and all of that are on an uptick, when my meteorologist at some local TV station would say, solar flares predicted for such and such? I mean, is that something that meteorologists should be talking about?
Meteorologists are talking about that, in fact, and they are becoming very interested in space weather impacts because the customers are the same customers that are there for weather. Aviation, for example, is a great particular example of places where weather and space weather come together. space weather because we're using global positioning system for routing and navigation for flights, but also for precision landing under low ceiling conditions.
Would flights be grounded in a period of high solar weather activity?
Flights have not been grounded, but they have been rerouted, and let me explain how that works. In the year 2000, we began what we call transpolar service. The shortest route from many of the East Coast cities to Asia is straight over the North Pole. And in times of severe space weather, the airlines that operate those flights, and there are over 9,000 flight movements through the pole last year, will reroute flights out of that polar region because of the potential of not being able to have HF radio communication with air traffic control.
Let's talk a bit about satellites. How do you protect those in these periods of severe space weather?
The impacts on satellites come from the charged particles, particularly the hydrogen nuclei at high energies can penetrate the shielding and the outside covers of the satellites and potentially interact with the electronics that are inside. And often, such interactions can lead to spurious commands that the electronic brain of the satellite thinks is going on. What satellite operators will do is they may be able to position or reposition satellites and orient them to have more shielding. Another option is when you put that satellite up to put enough shielding around the sensitive electronics so that it's impervious to even the strongest storms.
How would you rate people's, Earth's, overall preparedness for this uptick that's coming our way in the next few years?
I think we're well positioned to be able to deal with a lot of the space weather that's going on. The interest and the awareness of space weather is certainly very widespread in the satellite community, the power grid operators, in the aviation industry, and in precision GPS users. In fact, President Obama, when he was on his state visit to the United Kingdom in May of this year, actually with Prime Minister Cameron, talked about our nations working together to supply space weather products and services to make sure we're ready to deal with these moments when space weather can intrude in our lives.
That must have been music to your ears, Tom.
It was great to hear.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Tom Bogdan is director of the Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder. It's part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And to learn more about space weather or see forecasts, check the link at cpr.org.